You're spending thousands on dry hop on each tank of beer that you brew, and most of that aroma, it's going down the drain. What if I told you there's a natural, brewery-friendly way to squeeze more tropical punch, more citrus and pine, and more of that dank goodness out of the hops you're already using without adding extra dry hops or changing your yeast strain? In this episode of Quality Focus Pro Brewers, Adzi and I are diving deep into enzymes, which are the key to unlocking all that amazing hop aroma, cleaning up chill haze, and shaving days of tank residence time off each batch of beer, all without compromising your process or your beer. These aren't magic powders or shortcuts. These are natural tools that all of the world's best breweries use to make better beer faster. So if you're ready to stop wasting dry hop and to start turning heads in your tap room, smash that subscribe button, stick around, and let's get brewing. G'day, brewers. Welcome to the Quality Focus Pro Brewers podcast. My name is Hendo, and I'm a coach from the Rockstar Brewer Academy. I help professional brewers all over the world cut through the misinformation and internet research so that they can get the brewing technical knowledge they need to brew amazing world-class beer. Today, we're going to talk about enzymes, but I want to say, how are you, Adzi? What's going on, mate?
I am well. I am looking forward to the next few weeks. There's a lot of beer events and things popping up and that I'm going to. So yeah, I'm well. I'm looking forward to chat about enzymes because I don't know a lot about them, I must admit. So I'm keen to learn today.
Good. Excellent. 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 I love enzymes. They're an amazing thing. Talking about enzymes today is really interesting because everybody knows the main brewing enzyme that happens in the mash tun, but not many people know that there are lots of enzymes naturally in nature. But today I thought we'd just talk about their effect on beer and how they can help make your beer absolutely amazing.
Mate, what do you reckon? As I said, I'm really excited. I know they can be used for all sorts of cool things and to get a lot out of beer. I've used them once for a brewed IPA, but that's literally my experience using them on purpose.
Okay. So yes. So you've used the AMG enzyme to dry beer out.
That's right.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So this is the thing, right? Is that most, I suppose we should start with what are enzymes, right? So basically, enzymes are almost always a protein, okay? And what they are, to use some fancy words, they're basically a biocatalyst, right? And so a catalyst, what a catalyst does is it assists in a chemical reaction without actually being consumed itself,
yep.
Okay? And so what enzymes basically do, for the most part, is they split molecules into smaller molecules, yep. Right? And so what they do is they basically split, cleave is another word that you could use to say what they do to different molecules. Beer is such a complex drink, right? And there's so many different molecules in it and that do different things from appearance to flavor, aroma, and body and mouth feel and that sort of thing. And enzymes play a really big part in that, more than just the mash tun. So what an enzyme does is it cleaves a molecule apart without being consumed itself, making two new molecules that might do different stuff to the beer. The molecule that it cleaves apart is what's called the substrate. Okay, so you have an enzyme, you have the substrate, and then you have products, basically, which is the two molecules that happen when an enzyme splits up a molecule.
Yep.
Does that make sense? So most people know amylase enzyme, right? Because that's the enzyme that naturally occurs in malt. And again, if we're talking about cleaving, we've got long chain carbohydrate starches in the barley corn, and the amylase enzyme comes along and it cleaves off these carbohydrates into smaller carbohydrates, which just happen to be water soluble and fermentable. And that's what happens when you make it work, right? So that's the amylase enzyme, right? Really basic overview as to what an enzyme is, right? But the good thing is, right, is that you're not just limited to enzymes that just act on starches, right? There are other enzymes that do other things, and we'll talk a little bit more about those today.
Yeah, sounds good, because I know there's a lot of enzymes that act on hops and like with thiols and all sorts of stuff. So
100%.
Got the thiols is a buzzword. Because it is.
Well, yeah.
But yeah, there's enzymes for sort of everything. And yeah, I started researching before when you told me we were going to do this. So it's hard to dive down and not get lost in a quagmire of information. So really.
You went down the internet research rabbit hole.
Yeah, until you sent me your PDF and that helped a little bit. So.
It's good, isn't it? It's good, isn't it? Yeah, enzymes are really interesting, right? Because basically there's a lot of variables which affect how they work, right? So for example, let's go back to amylase, right? In the mash tun, right? The amylase enzyme works at its optimum rate when it's at mashing temperature or conversion temperature, which is usually, let's call it 58, 60 degrees Celsius up to mash out temperature, which is, was it 76 degrees, yep. Something like that, right? And if you go and mash in cold, let's say at room temperature, 20 degrees Celsius, right? You're not going to convert those starches into sugars, right? And that's because the enzyme isn't operating in its optimum range, right? Another variable that affects how enzymes work is pH, okay? And again, going back to mashing biochemistry, we adjust the pH in the mash tun in order to achieve a different outcome with regards to conversion rate, efficiency, work fermentability, all those sorts of things as well. But you can't just show a mash tun a picture of an enzyme and expect the thing to work. You've got to also have the right dosage rate, right? The right concentration of the enzyme, right? Luckily, in the mash tun, the enzyme is inside the barley corn, right? And it's in a sufficient amount or concentration to be able to do its job extremely well, right? To give an example of that, right, is maybe 150, 200 years ago, right? And everyone's heard of these really complex mashing programs where you've got to do your 40 degree furulic acid rest, and then you've got to do your protein rest, and then two saccharification rests, and then finally mash out and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of that was born a couple hundred years ago based around the fact that the maltsters and the barley farmers didn't have the understanding around enzymes and malting and all that sort of thing like they do today. And so these modern malt is phenomenal. If you read the certificate of analysis when you buy your malt, and you should always read the certificate of analysis every time you get a delivery of malt, one of the numbers that you'll get there is the diastatic power, right? And that's a number that says how powerful the enzymes are in the malt, right? And these days, modern base malt from all the maltsters all over the world is at least 150. What's the unit of measure? I think it's the Lindner. It is, off the top of my head. And so, but back in the day, it didn't have that enzymatic power. So mashes used to be longer, lots of temperature steps, and just to get the most sugars out of the malt and that sort of thing, right? So concentration, temperature, pH, all those sorts of things affect how enzymes work.
Yep. So should brewers be using enzymes like at all stages of their brewing process? Not just the mash, right? Like there's an enzyme for everything to a degree.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yes. So we'll touch on some of the enzymes that brewers can and should be using in this day and age if you want to make good beer and be good at it. But there are multiple enzymes at work in the mash tun. There's not that many enzymes that happen in the kettle and during the boil, because usually enzymes will denature when they get to a upper limit of temperature. Go back to the fact that they're a protein. If you think about an egg, what happens when you throw an egg in hot water? It cooks. That's denaturing of protein. Same thing happens to enzymes. Winds up being basically true in the kettle. But once you get into the fermentation vessel, then you can start to do some really interesting stuff, right? In terms of how fermentable the wort is. So the enzyme that you mentioned before, AMG, that stands for amyloglucosidase. That is an enzyme that cleaves non-fermentable sugars, splits them into smaller chain sugars, which are now fermentable by the brewer's yeast, right? There are enzymes that act on hops. There are enzymes that act on diacetyl. There's enzymes that act on thiols. It's phenomenal. And a good professional brewer knows that they are really powerful tools to get the most out of your raw materials. Yep. Right? Really common thing that, you know, when I have a chat to a brewer on a calibration call, if they're thinking about joining us at Rockstar Brewer Academy, one of the common problems that they come up with is, I'm not getting the most out of my hop aroma. I keep dry hopping and I'm increasing how many pounds per barrel or how many grams per liter I'm dry hopping, but I'm just not getting the most out of it. And it's just whatever I do, more is not more. And enzymes can actually even help you to unlock aromatic compounds out of hops, right? So there's lots of things that they can.
As I said, I'm really excited. I know they can be used for all sorts of cool things and to get a lot out of beer. I've used them once for a brewed IPA, but that's literally my experience using them on purpose.
Can do.
Yeah. So what are some of the biggest, like, both efficiency and quality challenges that brewers will face when they're not using enzymes that enzymes can help solve?
Enzymes are all about, and 100% about an efficiency thing, right? So, for example, if you're not getting the brew house efficiency, as we spoke about in a previous episode, you should go listen to that if you haven't listened to it already. One of the things you can do to extract more sugar out of, you know, you can use enzymes to extract more sugar out of your grain and get increased brew house efficiency. I'm not going to say mash efficiency. I'm going to say brew house efficiency. You can use enzymes to reduce your tank residence time. So, for example, residence time is the number of days from brew day to packaging day. During that time, you've got a tank or multiple tanks tied up to as that beer progresses through the brewery. The shorter you can make your tank residence time, the more beer you can make without having to buy more tanks.
More money you can make because you've got more beer.
Correct. Exactly. So you don't have to put your hand in your pocket for capital expenditure to go buy more tanks, spend a little bit of money on enzymes, shave two, three. I've got members of the Rockstar Brewer Academy are shaving 4 days. So that's like 10% of the residence time off. It's not actually, it's more than 10%, it's probably closer to 15, 20% off their tank residence time to just through creative use of enzymes. Here's another tank residence time thing, right? So when you go put a tank on chill, right, you're waiting for the beer to clear up during that cold maturation. Well, enzymes can help you with that and speed up that clarification time. And hop utilization is probably the other thing as well. So the efficiency in that particular case comes from, well, imagine if you could wave a magic wand and shave 20% of your dry hop charges and achieve the same aromatic outcome. It sounds pretty cool, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. What specific cases, not just like you've just said, chopping sugars and doing those, like what specific conditions have you got that some enzymes can really get in and help you focus? Like, yeah, residency time is great. Extra runoff is great. Some biotransformation. But what else is there that can do that? Like, go through the gamut.
Let's start in the mash tun, shall we? So the first enzyme that you probably, you know, if we talk about specific enzymes that you want to use, right, start in the mash tun, right, and use a bioglucanase enzyme, okay? Now, enzymes have funny names, right? So basically, they always end in the word ASE, and then usually the first part of the enzyme's word tells you what its substrate is going to be. So glucanase acts on glucans. It cleaves glucans, right? And so glucans are the kind of stodgy, porridgey kind of thing. They're like they're a complex carbohydrate, but it's the starchy, stodgy part of the in the mash. And so if you use bioglucanase, you can break down those glucans into fermentable and non-fermentable sugars. So what that means from an efficiency perspective is that what would normally be glucans normally being left in the mash tun and going out with your spent grain are now sugars that wind up in your kettle that become wort and therefore beer. And so you can easily increase your brew house efficiency by 10 or 15% just by using an enzyme like bioglucanase, right? And probably if we move into through the kettle and into the fermentation vessel, well, then there's a whole multitude of enzymes that we can use, right? Like the one that you mentioned, right? Which is the brute IPA or dry beer enzyme, or some people call it, the home brewers call it Beano or something like that. That is amyloglucosidase, okay? Amyloglucosidase, it breaks down unfermentable sugars, cleaves them into smaller chain sugars, which are therefore fermentable by the yeast, right? Fun fact, amyloglucosidase is a naturally occurring enzyme. It's in your body, it's in mine, it's in plants, particularly hops. And it's amyloglucosidase enzyme which is the first step in dry hop creep. Okay. Comes from the vegetal part of hops, and it gets excreted into the fermenting beer, and it starts cleaving non-fermentable sugars into fermentable sugars, which the yeast then go and eat. That's essentially dry hop creep in a nutshell. And so amyloglucosidase doesn't just come from hops as well. So if you've ever had a diastaticus contamination issue in your brewery or a Brettanomyces contamination in your brewery, you'll know that those yeast strains are known for breaking down unfermentable sugars into fermentable sugars and then fermenting them. That's what Brett in particular is all about, right? What's happening, right, with those particular yeasts, let's talk about diastaticus, for instance, okay? Diastaticus yeasts have the STA1 gene, which basically it's the genetic marker that says, I'm producing amyloglucoside enzyme inside the yeast cell, and it can accidentally leak out of the cell wall and into the beer and start doing the enzyme stuff to the beer instead of what normally should happen, which is the yeast cells will uptake those complex sugars. Yeast will go, oh, I can't eat that. I need to break it down. Amyloglucoside enzyme exists inside the yeast cell, breaks it down. All of a sudden it can make energy, right? In that metabolic pathway and that sort of thing, right? Really, it's a fascinating enzyme, but it exists in a lot of different places. It's in hops, it's in every yeast strain, but certain yeast strains express it outside the yeast cell and can have a dramatic effect, like things like the fermentation, overcarbonation of packaged beer, bursting bottles and cans and all that sort of stuff. That's amylo, dry hop creep. They're all amyloglucosidase. Fascinating enzyme.
Yeah, that's really cool. Matt, you talked about like some concerns around using enzymes in the public's eye, like this not being craft or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Look, that's an interesting one, right? Where I appreciate that there are some brewers out there who feel that using enzymes isn't craft and that you shouldn't use them. But here's the thing, right, is that they're naturally occurring. They're everywhere. They're in our body. We've got lots of different enzymes in our body doing lots of different things that help us to live. Without them, we wouldn't be alive. I get the concerns there where people go, oh, it's a processor, it's no longer craft and that sort of thing. But you have to ask yourself, right, is like you're just helping Mother Nature do its job. If we're in the mash tun and we're trying to turn starches into sugars, that happens normally. If you took a barley corn and planted it in the ground, that amylase enzyme creates simple sugars and therefore energy so that the barley plant can grow enough until it can sustain itself from the soil and the sun and the atmosphere, right? It's completely natural. We've just worked out a way in which we can harvest it and create the enzyme in a concentrated form that we can just go and add it in. Usually it's a liquid form. Go and add it into the thing to make it assist in doing the thing that we want to do in the brewing process, right? And they are completely natural. Do you know how they make enzymes in like the factory?
No.
How do you think they make
them? I don't know. I would assume it's similar to yeast, wouldn't it be? They get one cell and grow it up.
It's fermentation. Yep, absolutely. It's fermentation. And so we put wort into a fermentation vessel and we add a microorganism. And what we love about beer is that Saccharomyces cerevisiae makes ethanol, which is the fun part of beer, right? And that's fermentation, right? When these manufacturers go and make enzymes, they get different microorganisms and they ferment them, they feed them. And instead of excreting ethanol, they make this enzyme that they can go and harvest and go and do stuff with it, right? Probably a really good example of that is things like Brewer's Clarex is probably a good example, right? Have you heard of Clarex before?
Yeah, that's the diacetyl remover, is it?
That's ALDC. Yep. So I'll come back to that one because we'll dive into dry hop creep. Basically, you know, Clarex is a protease enzyme, right? So it acts on proteins, okay? And so it acts on proteins and cleaves apart the proteins that cause chill haze, right? And so that's what Clarex does. Now, here's the really interesting thing. What's the other reason that people put Clarex in a beer that you're aware of?
To reduce gluten.
Correct, right? So therefore, what is gluten?
Protein.
If the enzyme is protease and acts on proteins, gluten is a protein. It's the substrate, okay? And so I love doing this to people who like, and much respect to celiac friends out there and that sort of thing. It's a shit ailment to have. But there's people out there that choose not to eat gluten, even though they can. But then you go and ask them, you say, I can't eat that. It's got gluten in it. Then you go, okay, cool. What is gluten?
And they don't know.
And most of the time they can't answer. They go, it's wheat. It's wheat and barley. Yeah. But that's what it's in. But what is gluten? And the answer is basically gluten is a protein. Some people are allergic to it. And Clarex happens to be a protease enzyme that breaks down lots of different proteins, and gluten just happens to be one. And that's why Clarex can help to make gluten-reduced beers in Australia, gluten-free beers in America, and away you go.
Some brewers were using the Clarex to make gluten-reduced beers to widen the net for people who want to be gluten-free or gluten-reduced. Because it doesn't make any... It's up to the flavor or texture of the beer, right?
No, exactly. Absolutely not. Yeah. I highly recommend using Clarex. It's in my basic quiver of enzymes that I use because the main reason that I choose to use it is the chill haze factor. So if you happen to over sparge whilst you're lautering and sparging and that sort of thing, and you start extracting those tannins and polyphenols and all that sort of stuff that ultimately bond with the proteins and make chill haze, get the protein out of the equation and all of a sudden that chill haze problem starts to disappear. So yeah, I'm a big fan of it. It doesn't change the flavor of the beer at all. Anyone who says that it does is a little bit misinformed, shall I say.
Have you got any, like, what are some common mistakes or that brewers make when they're using enzymes, or how can they avoid making mistakes with enzymes? Because I'm assuming every time you get enzymes, there's a fact sheet.
Shall we talk about a myth?
An enzyme myth.
All right. So, okay. ALDC enzyme, right? Let's talk about that. Okay. So ALDC is the diacetyl enzyme. Okay. It stands for alpha acetyl lactate decarboxylase enzyme.
Let's just call it the diacetyl enzyme.
Oh, we could call it ALDC or the diacetyl enzyme or something like that. But yes, it's alpha-acetyl lactate decarboxylase enzyme. Okay, right. So let's talk about... So the myth is that many brewers are misinformed, thinking that if they put that in their beer, that it's going to stop dry hop creep. And that could not be more incorrect. Okay. ALDC enzyme, right? Its substrate is a alpha-acetyl lactate. Right, which is the diacetyl precursor. Okay, so if we talk about how diacetyl is formed during fermentation, yeast are happily fermenting away, and then they excrete alpha-acetylactate or AAL out of the yeast cell and into the beer, and then the AAL, we can't smell or taste it, and then the AAL goes through a process called oxidative decarboxylation, which is basically means it picks up an oxygen and drops a CO2, and that forms diacetyl, which smells and tastes like butterscotch. And then towards the end of fermentation, when there's not that much fermentable sugars available in the wort, because we're towards the end of fermentation, yeast will start to look for other things to eat. And lo and behold, they can eat diacetyl if they really want to. And they'll take that back up into the yeast cell and it disappears. Okay. and turns into other compounds, acetone and all that sort of stuff inside the yeast cell, but it's not in the beer. So you're not going to get the butterscotch flavor in the beer, right? So what ALDC enzyme does is, as the yeast, it excretes the alpha-acetylactate, right, the precursor to diacetyl, it acts, that's ALDC substrate is the AL, and it cleaves that molecule into a chemical compound called acetone.
Yep.
Right. We can't, and stops that AL from becoming diacetyl in the first place. Okay. Now, acetone, we can't really smell or taste it as easily as we can diacetyl. Yep. Right. So it's there. The yeast can even use it if they want to. But the fact that it's just there and it never becomes diacetyl is the reason why people use ALDC enzyme, right? Acetone, right, which is what the ALDC turns AL into. I've actually tried it. If you dose a beer enough with it, you can begin to taste it. So it actually smells and tastes like a very woody version of diacetyl. Yeah. So it's very similar, but it's more woody and nutty, if you can imagine that. But it takes a lot, right? And it's never going to be enough in a typical beer fermentation to be able to smell and taste it, right? So the myth is that ALDC prevents dry hop creep from happening, okay? So if we talk about what happens during dry hop creep, is you've got another enzyme. You've got amyloglucosidase enzyme, which breaks down complex sugars into simple sugars. The yeast go, oh, simple sugars, food, I'll eat that. And then they ferment it. And then what naturally happens? The yeast excrete alpha-acetylactate, which then goes through its oxidative decarboxylation and becomes diacetyl. So re-fermentation means more diacetyl will be produced, right? Now, so dry hop creep is a two-step process, right? When I introduce ALDC into the mix, right, the complex sugars are still being broken down into simple sugars, okay? And the yeast are still going to re-ferment those simple sugars, right? But the diacetyl is not going to be produced, right? So what ALDC enzyme does, it doesn't prevent dry hop creep from occurring because it's still happening. The complex sugars are still being broken down, the yeast are still consuming those simple sugars, and they're still fermenting them, right? So you're still going to get the overcarbonation, you'll get if it happens enough, you'll get a sweet tasting beer and all that sort of thing. But ALDC only addresses the diacetyl part, because a lot of people associate dry hop creep with diacetyl, a D-bomb beer, right? And the way that I view ALDC in the context of dry hop creep is, it's like taking an aspirin tablet when you've got a headache, right? It doesn't cure the headache. It just relieves the symptom or one of the symptoms, right? And that's what ALDC is. So ALDC does not prevent dry hop creep. It masks the symptom of dry hop creep. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Make mistakes with using enzymes. What do you see, or what have you seen with people? Like, is it more of a temperature thing that people are using them incorrectly, or is it a process that they're using them at the wrong times? Like, what are some really common mistakes that people use enzymes incorrectly with?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple of examples, right? So bioglucanase, right, that you use in the mash tun to break down glucans into fermentable sugars, right, or fermentable and non-fermentable sugars, right? That enzyme, if you look at the spec sheet, has an optimal pH range and an optimal temperature range, as all enzymes do. That enzyme can denatures at around 70 degrees Celsius. Remember the Brewlab brewery, right? It's a single infusion mash. So we put all the strike liquor, hot liquor, into the mash tun, and then we poured the bags of grain in, okay? Now, if we were aiming for a mash temperature of around 68 degrees, I'm sorry, my freedom units, I had beers last night, my freedom units conversion to Fahrenheit is just not working right now. And I apologize to my American friends. If you're aiming for a mash temperature of, say, 68 degrees Celsius, right, that strike liquor temperature is going to be around 74, 75 degrees Celsius. If you put the enzyme in before the grain, you're going to denature that enzyme, and it's not going to work, right? And that's why what we did on that particular brew house is we would put all the grain in except for the last bag. Then we would put the enzyme in and then the last bag would go in and we would stir the mash that way, right? And that's how we kept the bioglucanase enzyme active in its range where it didn't denature and it was there and it did its job.
Yep.
Right. Another misconception, that's temperature. Let's talk about timing of adding enzymes, right? So let's go back to the dry hop creep and the ALDC enzyme. Some brewers believe that you can go and add the enzyme to finish beer and that will protect the beer from dry hop creep or the diastole caused by dry hop creep. But that's too late to put that enzyme in because what's happened is the yeast have excreted the AAL, the precursor. The AAL has converted into diacetyl, but the diacetyl is yet to be taken back up into the yeast cell. If the AAL becomes diacetyl, the diacetyl is not the substrate of ALDC enzyme. It's AAL. So if you put the ALDC enzyme in and there's diacetyl already in the beer, it ain't going to do shit.
Yep.
Because that's not a substrate. Diacetyl is not the substrate of that enzyme. AAL is the substrate of that enzyme, right? And that's why it's super important to get the timing right. ALDC enzyme should go in at yeast pitch, cold side, right? You're obviously not going to put in hot side because you're going to denature it. You stick it in at yeast pitch, right? Some brewers will do a second dose at dry hop sometimes, but if you put enough in at the start of fermentation, you know, it's going to do its job.
Yeah, nice. Is there any sort of yeast that enzyme rather that people have found just recently? Like, have you got any new enzyme use that has come out that they used to use at a different brewing process, but now they've also found gets used in like when they're dry hopping or pre-packaging or something like that that was never used before? Because obviously these are new products that are constantly coming out and evolving. Is there any more?
Yeah.
Buzz stuff?
There's buzz stuff, all right? So, right. Everybody's heard of the term biotransformation, right? Yep. You know what biotransformation is? What's your understanding of what it is?
You put me on the spot now. It's the...
That's my job.
It's the hop utilization, the hop oil utilization.
Correct. Right. So, biotransformation is basically where the yeast excrete a specific type of enzyme that acts on hop compounds in order to unlock aromatics to enhance hop aroma and flavor in a beer, right? An IPA or something like that, right? There's a couple of different enzymes and molecules that come into play here, but let's talk about the glycoside. And so you can get an enzyme called glucoside aids. Their substrate is glucosides, which are in hops, right? A glucoside is basically a terpene that's bound to a glucose molecule. And so what a glucoside aase does, cleaving, right? It breaks that bond between the terpene and the glucose, right? All of a sudden, you've now got terpenes in your beer, which increases the hop aroma. And then you've got a glucose, which gets fermented by the yeast, okay? That's basically one form of biotransformation. There's another one that relates to thiols, but let's just talk about the glycosidic bonds, right? And making terpenes. You can buy that enzyme, right? And you can buy the glucoside aase enzyme, chuck it in at yeast pitch or at dry hop or something like that. And all of a sudden the dry hop that you put into your beer, you're actually unlocking more of the terpenes and increasing your hop aroma and flavor just through the creative use of enzymes, right? And so the benefit of that is that you can do interesting stuff like you can reduce the amount of dry hop that you put into a beer and actually save a bit of money, right, if you feel like doing that. Or on the flip side, you can keep the same amount and then boost up the hop aroma and flavor and be more efficient with the hops that you do use. I'm pretty strongly opinionated here when it comes to biotransformation in that the yeast are creating this enzyme. So that's why some yeast strains are better at unlocking hop aroma compounds and being better for hoppy beers because they're naturally excreting this glucosidase enzyme that acts on, which then goes and acts on the hops and unlocks all these terpenes and stuff like that, right? But I think, and I'm going to do an experiment on this, I think that, right, well, why should I be relying on the yeast? And if I like a particular yeast strain that doesn't really do much biotransformation of the hop compounds, well, why can't I just supplement it with some off-the-shelf glucosidase enzyme and keep that house flavor from that yeast strain, but boost up the hop aroma from it, right? And not have to change yeast strains and that sort of thing. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yep. With what we're using all these enzymes, it's obviously going to affect the quality of our beer and not just the quality, but the sensory as well, like the flavor and aroma. Mm-hmm. We're measuring all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. How do we measure the impacts on what the enzyme has done?
How do you know it's worked? Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So if you start using enzymes in your brewery, right, you have to ask yourself the question, how do I know that they've worked, right? Now, enzymes will help you with brew house efficiency and extract. They'll help you with hop aroma and flavor. They'll help you with beer clarity. The first thing you got to do is collect the data, okay? Go and listen to the podcast episode with Lindsay from Beer 30 if you want to know everything you need to know about collecting data in the brewery, right? As a professional brewer, you should be collecting lots of data. So, for example, you would start to, if we're going to talk about brew house efficiency, you would start to actually measure the volumes and gravities pre-boil in order to calculate your brew house efficiency. Start, change that one variable, start using the bioglucanase enzyme, for example, and continue to track, and you'll see that your brew house efficiency will go up. And therefore, you can actually quantify the dollar value around what using that enzyme did for your product, right? And that's super important. You, with regards to the organoleptic changes that the enzymes can have on beer, well, that's why you have a true to brand description around what your beer looks like, smells like, tastes like, and feels like. Okay. And so if, for example, you have a nice crispy boy Munich Helles in your lineup and the true to brand description says it's not supposed to have any haze and it's got haze, and it's chill haze, well, you're true to brand testing in your brewery, sensory testing in your brewery, you'll go, oh gosh, okay, this beer's not true to brand because it's got haze and it shouldn't have haze. Then you're obviously collecting the data around your sensory and all that sort of thing. And that's one of the things that members of the Rockstar Brewer Academy learn is how to start their sensory program and collect the data that they need so they can do true to brand testing and writing a true to brand
description. We've done a true to brand episode.
And you track that over time. Yeah, exactly. And you track that over time. And so by tracking your true to brand, let's just talk about haze and whether you use something like Clarix and that sort of thing. If you change that one variable, you start using Clarix in your beer and all of a sudden the dings against true to brand for haze start dropping. You go, right, successful mission. Right. So data is super, super important. So the numbers around efficiency and volumes and gravities, and also the numbers around true to brand testing is what you need to determine whether using enzymes has had an effect on the beer and your brewery.
Well, one last one for you. Are there any proprietary enzymes, or are there just a whole lot of different companies and brands that have the same enzyme and maybe it's at different concentrations or?
Oh, that's a great question. So enzymes are naturally occurring, but sometimes enzymes are created through a fermentation of a microorganism, right? And some of those microorganisms that produce those enzymes may be genetically modified and may have therefore intellectual property rights around them. But that, I'm no IP lawyer or anything like that, right? But I would imagine that the genetics could be trademarked, but not the enzyme, right, okay. I think. I can't think off the top of my head. It may be, maybe if you're listening to this and you've heard of a particular proprietary enzyme, not the microorganism that creates the enzyme, but the actual enzyme itself. And it might be proprietary in some sense. Leave a comment below, and I'd love to hear it. But I can't think of any off the top of my head. I can think of all microorganisms that make the enzymes being proprietary, but not the enzymes themselves. It's a really interesting question, Adzi. Sometimes you come out with these curveballs, and it's
at the end of an episode, I've heard all this information, and my brain just ticks something over.
It's pretty good. So leave a comment below if you have heard of any proprietary enzymes. I would love to hear about it and that sort of thing, because that sort of thing really fascinates me. And if you've enjoyed this chat today and you want to come and have a chat to me one-on-one, maybe think about booking yourself in a calibration call. It's a 15-minute chat with me, and we'll do a bit of an audit as to where you're at with your beer quality and consistency. And we'll have a chat and see if we can work with each other. And if I can't help you, I'll point you in the right direction. And if I can help you, I'll let you know. And we can talk next steps from there. But it's 15 minutes. It's free. It's fun. We'll just laugh and talk beer. And I love meeting new brewers from all over the world. It's pretty cool. Adzi, thanks heaps, mate. It's always a pleasure having a chat to you. And enzymes, we've ticked that one off the bucket list.
That's a good one.
I'm off to Korea tomorrow.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
I'm gonna have a ball in Korea, and I'm gonna eat all of the Korean barbecue and fried chicken and drink all of the cass.
Put my name down to come and judge next year. I don't know how you're getting invited, but I want to be there. I want to do something. So
I'll do my best, mate. You can see next year. You can send the miso back home to the motherland, and you can go somewhere else in Asia and come and judge some beer, man. Yeah. It'd be awesome. Too easy, Adzi. See you in the next episode. Cheers, mate.